In the year 1572, many Protestant Huguenots were gathered in Paris to celebrate the wedding of the king's sister to a Protestant nobleman. It was to be a festive day, with banquets, dancing, and parties throughout the city. But the day turned out very differently than planned. Leaders of the Catholic Church, who had long been fighting the spread of Protestantism, secretly arranged an assault. When the signal was given, over 2,000 Huguenots were brutally slaughtered in the city, including men, women, and children, some of whom were dragged screaming from their homes. As news of the attack spread, 10,000 more Huguenots were put to death in the outlying suburbs. It was an event that went down in history as the St. Bartholomew's Day Massacre. The massacre of the Huguenots happened over 120 years before the birth of the great French philosopher and writer Voltaire. Yet every year on the anniversary of the massacre, he ran a fever that sometimes confined him to bed. It seems an incredible story, and yet many who knew him corroborated it. Such was the passion for justice and the hatred for intolerance and cruelty that existed in this remarkable man, the most influential figure of the French Enlightenment. Voltaire was unique both as a man and a philosopher. He was a prolific correspondent who left behind 20,000 letters to friends filled with his thoughts and feelings. He was a wit and a charmer who delighted people with his amusing anecdotes and satirical comments. He was a humanitarian who actively supported and helped the oppressed and persecuted. He was a writer of stories, novels, poetry, and histories. He did not muse and contemplate and spend his time thinking, as most philosophers did. He was active, involved, and as interested in the arts as he was in thoughts. To the French of his time, he was a writer, not a philosopher at all. But to history, he was the intelligent, fiery, and energetic leader of France's Age of Reason. Voltaire was a Parisian by birth and by spirit, even though he spent much of his life traveling, in exile, or living in foreign cities. Late in life, he said of Paris, "I don't think that I've lived in this city for more than 3 years at a time. I know it only the way a German does on his grand tour of Europe." Nevertheless, he had a profound influence on Paris and France, and on all of Europe itself. Voltaire was born in Paris on November 21st, 1694. For some reason, it seems his birth was kept a secret, for he himself always said his true date of birth was February 20th, 9 months before it was reported. He also believed he was the son not of his mother's husband, but of an officer who was also a songwriter, which might account for the secrecy surrounding his birth. Voltaire never had much love for his father in name, and he lost his mother when he was only 7. He attached himself instead to his godfather, a free thinker and intellectual who guided his early learning. The era in which Voltaire was born marked the end of the glorious reign of Louis XIV. Louis, nicknamed the Sun King, was known for his brilliant court and the prestige France achieved during his rule. He made it the most powerful country in Europe and ushered in the golden age of French culture. Voltaire always admired Louis XIV and believed his whole life that the best form of government for France, and only France, was an enlightened monarchy. For other countries, he supported a constitutional government. Voltaire's name at birth was François-Marie Arouet. He adopted the pen name Voltaire years later when he was imprisoned in the Bastille, a name thought to be an abbreviated anagram for the French term Arouet the Younger. His parents belonged to the bourgeois, or middle class, of France, although there was some aristocratic blood on his mother's side. Because he was unusually precocious, the Arouets sent their son to Jesuit schools in Paris, the best and most exclusive schools in all of France. In school, he developed his love for the classics and his gift for making rhymes, and made lifelong friends who would strengthen his links with Paris. At 16, when he finished his education, Voltaire began his many years of wandering. He spent much time in the city, but he also spent time traveling around the countryside, staying in the chateau of his aristocratic friends. Paris society sought his company because of his cleverness, his genius at writing verse, and his gift for making people laugh, often at someone else's expense. Because of that gift, he also spent a year as a guest in the very unaristocratic building known as the Bastille, Paris's large and famous prison. He was being punished for some scandalous poems against the king, which he may or may not have written. He said he didn't, but it was a habit of Voltaire to deny his own work when it seemed it might threaten his freedom. While in prison, he wrote his tragic play, Oedipe, the first of 50 plays he would write that made him famous throughout France. When it was produced, the year after he was released, it was so successful with the public that overnight he became the leading playwright of his time. He also worked in prison on an epic poem about King Henry IV. He admired Virgil and always dreamed of writing an epic to equal the Aeneid. It was after this prison stay that he emerged with his new name, de Voltaire, a symbol of both his independence from family and background and his ambitions to fit in with the aristocracy. Once liberated from the Bastille, Voltaire thanked the regent for his gracious pardon. The regent, well aware of Voltaire's power, was equally anxious for a reconciliation and made apologies. Voltaire replied, "Your Highness, I am most grateful for your generosity with respect to my board, but in the future you need not worry yourself about my lodging." Voltaire's sharp wit, one of the greatest of modern times, was both a blessing and a curse to him. On the one hand, he could win almost any argument. His opponents came out looking either completely ignorant or utterly ridiculous. On the other hand, he couldn't resist lampooning the most respected beliefs, individuals, and institutions of his time, a habit that landed him in the Bastille more than once, led to his exile, and even once caused him to be beaten up by thugs, hired by a gentleman who had been the subject of his satire. The gentleman, the Chevalier de Rohan Chabot, had argued with Voltaire at the opera. It started when Rohan insulted Voltaire by asking, "What is your name, anyway, Monsieur de Voltaire or Monsieur Arouet?" implying that Voltaire was a commoner pretending to be a nobleman. Voltaire's response was that whatever his name was, he was bringing it honor, which was more than Rohan could say for himself. In the insults that followed, Rohan, like most who went up against Voltaire, came out looking badly. A few days later, Voltaire was dining with a friend when he was told that someone wished to speak with him. When he went out to the street, a number of ruffians hired by Chevalier fell on him and beat him up. Chevalier, watching from inside his coach, cried out, "Be careful not to hit him on the head. Something might come out of that one day." A great deal did come out of that head. Besides his plays, poetry, and philosophy, out came hilarious, if somewhat nasty, witticisms that kept French society constantly amused. When the philosopher Rousseau once sent Voltaire a copy of his new poem, Ode to Posterity, Voltaire sent it back with the simple notation, "I do not think this poem will reach its destination." And at the funeral of a nobleman, Voltaire declared, "He was a great patriot, a humanitarian, a loyal friend," provided, of course, that he is really dead. As long as his ridicule was directed at the right people, understanding friends or dead men, Voltaire was all right. It was when he directed his bon mots toward the haughty and powerful that he ran into trouble. That's what happened when he came up against Rohan, who still wasn't satisfied, even after he had Voltaire beaten. Next, he arranged to have him carted off to the Bastille again. A few days later, Voltaire was allowed to choose between imprisonment and exile. he made the obvious choice. In a state of rage, Voltaire headed out for London, where he found a mini Paris of other exiles, all Huguenot refugees fleeing French persecution. The 3-year stay in England had a deep effect on Voltaire's opinions and ideals. While there, he made friends in the highest literary circle and studied progressive English thought, including that of Isaac Newton and the philosopher John Locke. He even attended the funeral of Newton, and when he returned home, set a goal of translating Newton's works into French. Because of England, Voltaire developed more radical opinions on religion and politics. He became convinced that the reason the English were at the forefront of scientific thought was because of the personal liberty it allowed its citizens. It's been said that Voltaire left for England a poet and returned a philosopher. In England, he also had the chance to practice the art of tactfulness. Feelings against the French were running high in those days, and Voltaire was once surrounded by an angry mob yelling, "Hang him! Hang the Frenchman!" Turning to face the mob, Voltaire exclaimed, "Men of England, you wish to kill me because I am a Frenchman. Am I not punished enough in not being born an Englishman?" This little speech so pleased the crowd that they cheered him and offered him an escort back to his lodgings. By the time he was in his 30s, Voltaire was independently wealthy through an inheritance and wise investments. He was also such a celebrity that he was asked to write 3 plays to celebrate the wedding of King Louis XV. Royal pensions, gifts, and other honors followed. In a 15-year period when he was in his 40s and his early 50s, Voltaire lived mainly in the French countryside with his mistress, Madame du Châtelet, a wealthy, cultured, and intelligent woman who owned an estate at Cirey, which Voltaire renovated at his own expense. The life the two lovers lived together was both luxurious and studious. Madame Châtelet was passionately interested in science and metaphysics and influenced Voltaire in both directions. They even set up what they called a gallery, which today would be called a laboratory, of the physical sciences at the chateau. Together they set out to translate Newton's masterpiece, Principia Mathematica, into French, after which Voltaire wrote a commentary on the book. Both learned English just so they could translate this one work. It was Voltaire, more than anyone else, who made Newton fashionable among non-scientists. In France, people were still reading the pre-Newtonian ideas of René Descartes, but with Voltaire's influence, it became chic not just to study Newton, but to understand and admire science in general. For that reason, Voltaire was the leader and the embodiment of the Age of Reason in France. While he lived with Madame Châtelet, Voltaire also wrote several plays, essays on metaphysics, philosophical tales, and poetry. From their chateau in Cirey, he made frequent visits to Paris, sometimes to supervise rehearsals for his plays. At one rehearsal, he was sitting with a group of friends when, during a lengthy reading of a speech, the philosopher Montesquieu fell asleep. Voltaire commented to the others, "Wake him up. He seems to imagine that he's in the audience." Voltaire was in his late 50s when he fell deeply in love with his niece, Madame Denis, his dead sister's daughter, without breaking off his relationship with Madame Châtelet. By then, he was an accomplished man of the world and the most famous literary man in all of Europe. Madame Denis was about 40, an intelligent but abnormally greedy and self-centered woman. Yet Voltaire wrote to her sensual and longing letters, begging for her affection and favors. Throughout his life, Voltaire had lovers and mistresses, but he never married, and he also seemed able to keep his passions in check when necessary. Once, when a notorious group of Parisian libertines invited him to an orgy, Voltaire accepted and later gave a satisfactory account of the evening. But when the same group invited him to another orgy the following day, he replied, "Ah, no, my friends, once a philosopher, twice a pervert." When he was 53, Voltaire was guilty of another brash comment that once again forced him into a sort of exile. This time, when Madame Châtelet lost large sums of money at the Queen's gaming table, Voltaire commented to her in English, "You are playing with card sharpers." Unfortunately, there were others in the room who also spoke English. Voltaire was forced to go into hiding at the country mansion of a friend. Here he began exploring a new genre of writing, the fictional story in prose. It would have been a happy time at the mansion, happily writing and enjoying his new art form, but within a year he was hit by a series of personal crises. The first one occurred when he discovered that Madame Châtelet was having an affair with a poet named Saint Lambert, which, in spite of his own previous affair with his niece, seemed to cause Voltaire severe depression. Then, only a few months later, Madame Châtelet died in a way that can only be described as classically French. She expired giving birth to a baby who was not the child of Voltaire, her lover, nor of Monsieur Châtelet, her husband, but of the dashing young poet, Saint Lambert. Voltaire was present at the time, as the woman who for 15 years had been his guide, counselor, and lover, took her last breath. Following her death, Voltaire began his long exile. He first returned in despair to the house in Paris they had shared, where he would rise in the middle of the night and wander in the darkness, calling her name. His sense of defeat grew even worse when his latest plays, the first sentimental comedies he'd attempted, were complete failures. Then he made the mistake of getting involved in some of the king's politics. Louis XV made it clear he wasn't welcome in France anymore, so Voltaire moved to Prussia, offered asylum by the progressive King Frederick the Great, whom Voltaire called the Philosopher King. He took with him his books, his ideas, and his famous sense of humor. When a noblewoman who had been absent from the court for a long time finally returned, she complained to Voltaire, "The things they say about me are incredible. They even say I retired to the country in order to give birth to twins." Voltaire's clever response was, "Don't be disturbed. I only believe half of what I hear at court." Before long, Prussia, too, turned out to be a disaster for Voltaire, who never seemed able to get along with any king indefinitely. He quarreled with Frederick when he grew tired of his social and intellectual tyranny. Things reached a crisis when Voltaire wrote a pamphlet that ridiculed the president of Frederick's Academy of Science. The king had all copies of the pamphlet burned and gave Voltaire a severe scolding. Disgusted, Voltaire tried to leave Prussia, but was put under house arrest at an inn in Frankfurt on his way out. When he was released, he intended to return to Paris, but King Louis XV forbade him to enter France. Voltaire suddenly found himself homeless and unwanted in any of the countries of his choice. Finally, when he was close to 60, he found a satisfactory new home near Geneva, Switzerland, which had offered him asylum. He called his estate in the town of Ferney, Les Délices, or the Delights. He lived out almost the entire rest of his life there, returning to Paris only to die after an absence of 30 years. Throughout all these years of wandering and exile, Voltaire kept in constant touch with Paris through correspondence with his friends. They kept him informed of literary and theater news, sent him the latest books and writings, supervised the performance of his plays, and published his writings. Wherever he lived, whether it be London, Cirey, Prussia, or Geneva, his home welcomed a constant stream of Parisian visitors with whom he discussed the latest artistic and political developments. In a sense, Voltaire ran a literary government in exile. It was in Ferney, when he was rich, famous, and old, that Voltaire became a serious crusader against social and political injustice. He began to sign all his letters with his famous slogan, "Écrasez les femmes," crush the infamous, or crush the evil thing. By the infamous evil thing, he meant organized religion, the church, and Christianity, but more specifically, their intolerance and tyranny. His other targets were the unfair criminal justice system and censorship of the press. He urged his friends to fight for tolerance and freedom, to never give up, and to lie if necessary. At the age of 68, he launched a campaign to reform the French legal system, which included removing blasphemy and homosexuality from the catalog of crimes, reducing punishments, making trials public, abolishing torture, and guaranteeing lawyers for defendants. He also involved himself in the politics of Geneva, taking the side of the workers and those without civil rights. To help them, he installed a stocking factory and a watchworks on his estate. He called for the liberation of serfs, without success, but he did succeed at ending customs barriers that made trade difficult for the merchants and farmers. Although financially secure, embraced by the aristocracy, and old enough to retire without blame, he became a full-time humanitarian, taking on the cause of the oppressed and the miserable. When he intervened on behalf of a persecuted Protestant family named Calas, the philosopher Diderot was so amazed that he wrote to a friend, "Oh, what beautiful use of genius! What are the Calas to him? What can interest him in them? Why should he suspend work that he loves in order to occupy himself in their defense? If I were Christ, I assure you that Voltaire would be saved." The Calas case occurred in 1761, when Voltaire was 67. Marc Calas, the son of a Huguenot cloth merchant, was found hanged in his father's shop in Toulouse. He had been an unhappy young man, prevented from entering the legal career he desired because he was a Protestant. But even though suicide seemed likely, the authorities thought it had been murder. They claimed Marc Calas had been about to convert to Catholicism, and so his own father had killed him. The entire family was arrested and interrogated. The father was tortured, his body broken on the wheel, while he continued to protest his innocence, and later he was executed. Voltaire was enraged. He didn't know whether the father was innocent or guilty, but either way, he saw the case as a good example of religious tyranny. If guilty, the father was an example of Protestant bigotry leading to murder, for he had killed his own son for wanting to be a Catholic. If innocent, the case was an example of the cruelty and tyranny of Roman Catholics, who had set up and executed an innocent Protestant. After studying the case at length, he became convinced the Calas family was innocent, and he mounted a campaign to clear its name. After 3 years, he was successful, and the verdict was overturned. Shortly after, he tried to intervene in another injustice, this time with no success. When a 19-year-old named Chevalier de la Barre was beheaded for having insulted a religious procession and damaging a crucifix, he protested actively and suggested that all philosophes should leave France and settle in the town of Cleves, which had been offered them by Frederick the Great. Philosophes was the term the French applied to the scientific thinkers of the Age of Reason. Although he wasn't able to obtain a reversal on the judgment of young de la Barre, he was able to achieve reversals in other judicial decisions he found unjust. His generosity with the locals and his commitment to social justice earned Voltaire the popular acclaim of the people in Ferney. His fame was now worldwide, and he had so many esteemed visitors that he was called the Innkeeper of Europe. While living in Ferney, which he soon made the intellectual capital of Europe, Voltaire produced a constant flow of books, plays, pamphlets, and letters, and wrote his famous book, Candide. He also kept up an enormous correspondence with the philosophes, with actors and actresses, with those high in court circles, including Madame du Barry, favorite consort of Louis XV, and Catherine II of Russia. He even renewed his friendship and correspondence with Frederick the Great. Skeptic as he was, he also rebuilt a church for the villagers and erected it over the sign Deo Erexit Voltaire. Voltaire erected this for God. Never missing a chance to criticize religion, he liked to remark to visitors that it was the only church in Europe that was erected to God. After the Calas case and others of legal injustice, Voltaire moved on to more general programs for extensive legal and social reform. By now, he was a hero. When he returned to Paris in 1773, at the age of 78, he was welcomed as the savior of the Calas family and a champion of human rights. The day after his arrival, more than 300 visitors called on him, nobles, aristocrats, scholars, and commoners alike. When his latest play, Irene, was shown before an ecstatic audience, he was crowned in his box. In his last years, Voltaire continued to work and to campaign for tolerance and reason, even into his 70s. He drank enormous amounts of coffee to keep himself going, as he had his whole adult life. When someone admonished him, saying coffee was a slow poison, he responded, "It must be slow, for I have been drinking it for 65 years, and I am not dead yet." The excitement of the return to Paris eventually affected Voltaire's health. On May 18th, in 1778, he was stricken with uremia and failing kidneys. In the last month of his life, when he remained as an invalid in the mansion of a friend, Voltaire was visited by hundreds of admirers, anxious to pay their last respects. He kept his scathing wit until the end, when visited by two mediocre and obscure dramatists named Lemierre and de Beloy, he dryly commented to them, "Gentlemen, as I take farewell of life, I am consoled by the knowledge that I leave behind me Lemierre and de Beloy." Lemierre liked to retell the story for years later, adding that although he knew he was being made fun of, de Beloy had not. As he lay on his deathbed and a priest arrived to give the last rites, Voltaire asked him if he'd been sent by the local abbot. "God himself," answered the priest. "In that case," said Voltaire, "where are your credentials?" Voltaire suffered much pain on his deathbed, but finally passed away peacefully on May 30th, at the age of 84. The Roman Catholic Church refused to allow his body to be buried in church ground, but his nephew quickly whisked it away to an abbey, clothed just as it was when Voltaire died. There he was given a swift Christian burial by the sympathetic local clergy, which didn't receive the prohibition on such until after the event. 13 years later, during the French Revolution, his remains were transferred to the Pantheon in Paris, where many of France's greatest artists and heroes are buried alongside him. Voltaire died before the dawn of that revolution, which his writings had helped inspire. In his own times, Voltaire was known not as a philosopher, but as a great writer. The public adored his first tragic play, Oedipe, devoured his historical works, and made bestsellers out of his treatises like Dictionnaire Philosophique. Voltaire, too, saw himself as a professional writer and was always very sensitive to the opinions of his contemporaries. He wrote and rewrote constantly. His style was clear but never dull, varied but distinctive. He was good at explaining, and he was exceptional at being witty, which endeared him to the public most of all. His contemporary philosopher, Diderot, said, "What is it that particularly distinguishes Voltaire from all our young writers? Instruction. Voltaire knows a great deal, and our young poets are ignorant. The work of Voltaire is full of matter. Their works are empty. At the time Voltaire wrote, there was heavy censorship and suppression. When he visited England, he was impressed with the freedom granted its writers and hoped to duplicate it in France. But things were different in France. To survive, writers needed the approval of the monarchy and sometimes the church. If they dared defy these powers, like Rousseau had, they spent their entire lives being hunted through Europe while they desperately sought a safe haven. Voltaire chose a different course, one for which he's often been criticized. His tactic was to flatter the kings and queens of Europe in hopes they would then allow him to publish his works. He wrote letters to some monarchs that are said to be too embarrassing to read, so servile and ingratiating are they. These tactics caused the poet Goethe to later say of Voltaire that few writers had made themselves so dependent in order to be independent. But if a writer of the 18th century had subversive ideas, as Voltaire did, the choices were either persecution, exile, imprisonment, or, as he chose, pretense. Not only did he flatter, but he sometimes denied writing pieces he had obviously written. It was all part of his struggle to survive and to be able to continue with his work. Of all the writing Voltaire did, his plays, his poems, his stories and essays, only the novel Candide is still widely read today. It's a brilliant philosophical tale that describes the adventures of a young man as he wanders around the world. But beneath the story is a complex exploration of the nature of good and evil. Candide sees and suffers so much misfortune that he's unable to believe that this is the best of all possible worlds, as his teacher, Dr. Pangloss, has taught him. He retires with his companions to the country, where he discovers that the secret of happiness is to cultivate one's garden. As a philosopher, Voltaire was not of the contemplative, meditating school. In fact, he was opposed to contemplation for its own sake and saw philosophy as a discipline that involved intelligent, critical thinking leading to appropriate action. He was an activist, a crusader, and a reformist who once said, "Man is born for action," and who wrote all his philosophy with political purposes in mind. Philosophy, to Voltaire, was something that demanded hard, concentrated labor. He intensively studied Locke and Newton, criticisms of the Bible, science, and theology. For his whole life, Voltaire struggled with the idea of God. He was what is called a deist. Deists believe in the existence of God based on reason and not on supernatural revelation. They also believed that God sets the world in motion, then sits back and takes no personal interest in it. Voltaire felt the world had been created by a divine intelligence who had established a world based on universal, unchanging laws. This divinity wasn't worshipped through prayer, priests, miracles, or faith. It was worshipped by admiring its accomplishments in the world. His most famous slogan, "Écrasez les femmes," crush the infamous, was directed against superstition and persecution by the church and all religions. He strongly opposed institutional Christianity, but he believed in a supernatural power who was best served if people lived good lives. Voltaire felt that God was necessary to explain the universe and life, to give a reason for moral behavior, and to protect the downtrodden common people. It was Voltaire who made the famous comment that if God didn't exist, we would have to invent him. As a deist, Voltaire believed that the universal, unchanging laws of the world included moral laws, just like Socrates and Confucius had taught. He saw ethics as the heart of philosophy and its main task as improving the world. God, he felt, was removed and inactive. He had set up natural laws, and now it was up to humankind to fend for itself. Voltaire was a man of enormous intelligence and unmatched wit, but if there was one characteristic that was his strongest, it was that he could not bear cruelty. From the beginning, he was appalled by the harsh God of the Old Testament and sought instead a God who was kind and loving, but also believable. So grieved was he by human suffering and brutality that he wrote to his friends, late in life, that he was ashamed of being happy. It didn't seem appropriate in a world that was so ignorant and miserable. Injustice, repression, and cruelty made Voltaire furious. He once said, "I know how to love because I know how to hate." But his greatness lies in that he fought against what he hated and what he loved: justice, freedom, tolerance, and all that benefited human growth and happiness. He defended at great risk and with untiring effort.
This is the end of the session.